Hi, everyone. So don't get too comfortable because we're going to do an activity in a minute, and then I'm just going to make y'all move up front. Because I know I'm the back, I love the back row too. But what happens to me in the back row is I become, the bad kid in class. Okay, so today I'm going to talk to you about technology. And it's going to be kind of funny because I'm going to be honest right now, I don't use technology in my classroom. But I know people who do and who do it very well. And I'm going to tell you why I don't use technology. Okay, so I have been an educator for the past 20 years. So this is my 20th year in education. And I didn't intend to be a teacher. It was not what I set out to do. I was going to be a filmmaker. And then I realized that I didn't really enjoy that career choice. And so I was just sort of floating around. I became a paraeducator in a special education classroom, and that was my first introduction of the impact a teacher can have on students. And not counting my experiences as a student, because of course I had several educators who made quite an impact on me throughout my school career. But that experience in special education was really tremendous because I had this amazing lead teacher who taught me what it meant to value coworkers and to really focus on each individual student and what they need. Then I went on to the Peace Corps and I served for 2 years in Armenia where I taught English. And oh, I forgot to put my pins on. I'm sorry, I don't have my pins on today. I usually wear them to every single event and they're up in my room. And so now I'm feeling weird because I don't have my pins on. And they're a little scratchy, and that's how I noticed that I didn't have my pins on. So I served for 2 years in Armenia, and that was what actually led me to becoming an educator because I moved to Texas after that to be with my aunt. She also encouraged me to be an educator, and I told her, no, I can't be a teacher because I don't have a degree in education, nor do I have a teaching certificate. And she was like, it's gonna be fine. Just apply for jobs. And so I did, and she was right. Rural Texas really needs teachers. And so just solely based on my teaching experience in the Peace Corps, my experience as a paraeducator, and my vast experience in speech and debate and theater in high school, I got a job teaching theater and coaching the speech and debate team. And that was incredible. And long story short, I did get my teaching certificate so everyone can breathe. I went on to teach at Amarillo High School for a few years, and then I went to Japan and taught for a couple of years. I moved to Bronx, New York, where I taught for a year, and that was one of the most transformational experiences of my life because I really recognized how our systems sometimes become systems of oppression. Ever since then, I've been working to shift and change and hopefully break down the system, create a new one, and make sure that it truly is equitable for all students. And now I teach here. So these are my kids now. This is my family, just so you know. That's my husband and my oldest son, Bailey, Faith, and then my littlest, Harper Boone. And then this is my class from this last school year. I'm not currently teaching. I'm just traveling around and talking to people, which is a really huge shift for me. And I really, really miss students because students bring us hope and they represent all that is possible in our world. So I'm going to talk, that's what I'm actually going to talk about today with technology because technology can be used for so many things. And what we have found in schools is that it can be extremely distracting. And it can also, even though we feel like we're connected with tons of people all over the world, we're not really. And we feel very isolated because of technology. And so I'm going to talk to you about one teacher that I know who does incredible work and uses technology in a way that broadens the worldviews of his students and connects them with classrooms, not only in our nation, but also across the ocean. So first, though, I want us to calibrate our mindsets. No, I don't. I want us to do this activity. And then we will. So does everybody know what Humans of New York is? Hold on, I gotta find my mouse. There it is. So Humans of New York is this incredible thing that has happened over in New York. It started in New York, but now it's gone worldwide. And it's this gentleman who was feeling a little bit hopeless. And I think that we can all relate to that right now in our nation and in the world. There's a lot happening that can make us feel a little bit downtrodden. But when we really reach out to individual human beings and make connections, we can see that we're all going through similar things, and we're also all hopeful, and it's what makes our world beautiful is our differences and our stories. And so we're just going to go through this. So we're going to read one or two of these stories. So tell me when to stop. Anybody can say stop if they see something that they want to explore. Stop. Okay, which one?
The hands.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to read it because it's a little bit small. So my parents didn't have any money, so I began living with my uncle when I was 15. For years, he treated me like his own son. Anything I asked of him, he would give me. We played music together. We sang in the choir together. But when he met a woman, everything changed. He suddenly decided to stop providing for me. I couldn't buy myself food or clothes anymore. I felt betrayed. So I snuck into his room and took some money from his drawer. His new girlfriend caught me, and she told my uncle when he came home. I cried when he confronted me, but there was nothing I could say. I knew that I had to leave the house. My situation was desperate. I had nothing to eat. I moved in with a friend, and some days we'd share a single bowl of curry. I was forced to figure things out. I began to work harder. Okay. I found a job as a cleaner. Now I'm studying to be a chef. I'm 25 years old, and for the first time in my life, I'm standing on my own 2 feet. I haven't spoken to my uncle since that day, but I'm going to see him in a couple of weeks. I realize now that I was too old to be depending on him. I felt entitled to his generosity, and when he took it away, I betrayed him. He wanted me to become a man, so I want to tell him that I understand, and thank you, and I'm sorry. Okay, let's read one more. Tell me when to stop. Stop? Did someone say stop? Okay, which one?
The lady with the white.
This one? Okay. I was married when I was 17. My whole life was my family. I barely left the house because my husband brought me everything I needed. I was far too innocent. I had no idea about anything. But the world has a way of teaching you. 15 years ago, my husband died, and I had to take the lead of the family. He owned an upholstery shop. The workers tried to convince me to let them handle the business, but they were hiding the profits from me. I had to take over. There was no other choice. My kids were still in school, and that money belonged to them. So I began going to the shop every day. At first, the workers tried to box me out. They knew I didn't understand the business, so they wouldn't explain anything. They hid the numbers from me. And when a client entered the store, they wouldn't even introduce me as the owner. So I sat there and watched every move they made. I memorized everything. And after 40 days, there was some new rules at the shop. The workers were not allowed to speak to the client directly. All right. So something that you can notice about these stories. So that last one was from Ghana, and this one's from Cairo, Egypt. And he also has stories from all over the world. He started in New York, so it's stories about people in New York, and then he slowly spread from there. But I think the things that you can take away from those two stories are, we have people here probably in this room who have become estranged from relatives, right? We have people in this room who have likely had a family member die and had to take on new responsibilities. There are connections that we can make no matter where we live or how we live or who we are, because we all matter and we all have things in common. So what I'm going to ask you to do right now is to choose a partner, and it has to be someone you don't know. So you're going to have to stand up. I know it's uncomfortable and people don't want to do that, but you're going to have to stand up. You're going to find someone you don't know, and you're going to talk to them. So person A, partner A, and partner B. Partner A is just going to listen. And this is something that we, particularly as Americans, have a really hard time doing. Because every time we're hearing a story, we're thinking of our own story. And that's human nature, because we want connection. But real connection comes with active listening and really, really looking at the person and listening to what they say. And not thinking about your own experiences. That can come later. But thinking about what more you want to know. So you can start with something as simple as, hey, those are really cool boots. Do you wear boots all the time? Something really simple. Or, hey, why are you at Tech Fest? Anything like that. Okay, so start with something simple. You're going to talk and listen for 3 minutes. Okay? And then we're going to switch, and you're going to hear each other's stories. Okay? So stand up. Be a little uncomfortable. It's going to be great. I promise I'll talk about technology soon. You have to go to someone you don't know. Okay, person A, you're going to begin. So you guys decide who's A and who's B. So person A, start asking questions. Keep asking questions, even if they say they're done. Keep asking questions.
Thank you.
Okay, person B, finish up your story. Last sentence. Okay, now it's person B's turn to be the listener, and person A is going to tell their story. So person B, start with a question, and remember, you're actively listening. You're not sharing your own stuff. You're just asking questions and listening to person A, okay? So person B, go. Okay, finish your sentence. Okay, waterfall. Shh. Okay, I think it's the shh makes everybody go. Okay. So now that everybody's kind of up and in a different place, now I'm going to ask everybody to move up to the front and try to populate the first two rows. Maybe the third row there is fine. Because I'm going to ask you to talk about a couple of things, and so I want to make sure that you're next to someone that you can talk to. Okay, so as we move, I just want to know, how did that feel? Yeah. So at first, everybody's like, oh, God, I have to talk to someone new. And I'm an introvert, like, bad. And so I would, if this happened to me, I would be like, oh, geez. I might even consider leaving. But I would do it because I like to, I believe, and if I had one of my pins here, you'd see, life begins at the end of our comfort zone. And making a connection takes a little bit longer than 30 seconds. But it doesn't take that long. It only takes like 2 or 3 minutes. So as you were uncomfortable at the beginning, but then it got easier, Did you find that it was a little bit easier to be vulnerable with the person? Because at first you just want to talk about something like innocuous, like maybe what you do, right? Or why you're here, or but then as you start to talk and the other person is really, really listening to you and asking you questions, you begin to open up and make a connection. So did you find it hard to actively listen? That's awesome. Because as people who have lived for a very long time in the United States, it's very hard for us to listen. Because we're always thinking about what we want to add, right? So to make a true connection with people, you have to actively listen to them. And everything you ask them has to be related to whatever they're telling you. And then it's easier for people to become vulnerable with you and to be able to learn about them as human beings. And then you create connections. So hopefully everybody in the room felt for just a moment that they really mattered to someone else. Because ultimately, that's what we're looking for as human beings. We're looking to know that we matter and that we belong. And belonging is super important. It's everything that you see happening right now in our nation is people seeking to belong. And whether they belong with a group that shuts other people out, they feel they belong with that group. Or whether they are seeking to open things up and welcome people in, those people also feel that they belong to that group. So the more we listen and the more we connect with human beings, the more we'll all feel that we belong and maybe we won't fight so much. So that was just a little warm up. Now I am going to ask you to calibrate your thinking. As human beings, one of the things that we love to do is focus on what we don't like. We love to focus on the negative things happening and we really dig into that. And my personal story, this journey as Teacher of the Year has been totally incredible. And for the most part, people have been super loving and supportive and, like, excited. But there's always that one person who's like, she doesn't deserve this. This is stupid. So where's all my mental energy go? Does it go with all of those, you know, 50, 70 people who are like, yes, Mandy, this is awesome? Or does it go with that one person who's being a jerk face? It goes with the one person. And so it's really important in every conversation, particularly around education, because we all think we know what should happen in a school, in a classroom. We all think we know because we were all students at one time. But we tend to focus on the bad things and what we didn't like about school. But guaranteed, every single one of us had at least one positive experience with another human being at school. A teacher or another staff member who really connected with you, made you feel important, made you feel that you belonged and that you mattered. For me, that was my seventh grade teacher, Mrs. Baker. When I just moved to California, I was brand new to the school. So I was brand new to middle school and brand new to the community. So I had no friends. I didn't even know really where I was. And I walked into Mrs. Baker's classroom. And she immediately made me feel like I mattered. She believed in me no matter what. And I knew that from the very first day. She got to know me. And because of her, my entire trajectory in life changed. Because after that year, she put me in higher level classes. She helped me to become part of mock trial, which I never would have. I was even a lawyer. I didn't do an awesome job, but she believed that I could do it. And as a result, she believed in me so much, I believed in myself. And it just pushed me through high school and all of my other experiences, especially in middle school, which is really difficult. We need the best teachers in middle school. Yes. With Mrs. Baker? For that year. For the seventh grade school year. And of course, like during eighth grade, I went back to and visited her all the time because she was just across the courtyard. But she was just amazing. But then we moved and I moved to Federal Way. I moved like 20 times growing up. Not because we were military, because everybody always assumes that. My mom just really likes change, which, as a result, if you noticed through my experiences, I also really like change. So, but I did, and I still, you know, thought about her every day, my whole, even now, I think about her, but she passed away. Because I would totally be like, look, Ms. Baker. But she passed away. So right now, I want you to think of that one teacher, and you might have ones all each of your years, but I want you to think about the one teacher or staff member, because sometimes it's not the teacher. Sometimes it's a paraeducator or a cafeteria person or a secretary or a counselor. So I want you to think of that one person who really made a difference for you. And the difference doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be like, they set me on my career. It can just be that they made you feel good and they connected with you and you liked to be in their presence and they made a difference. Okay? So share it with someone you're sitting next to. Think of the person and then share it. Make sure you both have an opportunity to share. All right, did everybody have a chance at least to say the teacher's name or the educator's name or the staff person's name? All right. Okay, waterfall. Shh. Yeah. So I teach secondary school, which is funny because we don't do anything like that. Like we don't do clap if you hear me. Clap once. If you hear me, clap twice or anything like that. But because high school kids go. But I found that waterfall thing, and it works literally with every single group. So it doesn't matter. You guys take that, because when you're in with it in a meeting or anything, you can be like, hey, guys, waterfall, shh, and everybody will go. It works really well. Okay, anyone want to share their story about their teacher or their educator or staff member? Anyone? Yeah.
I was just telling James that I have a few. You know,
yeah. Director of the graduate program, yeah.
He's just a real mentor.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had other great ones, but this one is really, really special.
That's amazing. So I think that's an important piece because people can impact you at every stage in your life. It happens when you need it. And I think that's important to note. And so I just want to ask you, when you think back to school, are you thinking about the amazing lessons that the teachers and the things you experienced in your classroom? Is that what you're thinking about? Anyone? Couple people. And are you thinking about everything you learned and like you've carried it with you and it has impacted you so much in your life because you had that knowledge? For some of you, that's probably the case because it depends on your path in life. But for the majority of the people in this room, it's about the feeling. What we do in school is not necessarily about the content. The content is the vehicle. It's the vehicle. But it's not the main focus. The main focus is on making us believe in ourselves, opening up our potential and reaching that potential. And the only way we can do that is if we believe in ourselves. And the only way we believe in ourselves is if people care about us and are connected to us. And that's not always just one educator. It could be an entire classroom of students. But it's that feeling that carries us through and really what the focus is. So as we talk about technology today, I want you to think about that. How is technology helping kids believe in themselves? How is technology helping us connect with one another? So I teach in the Newcomer Center, and the Newcomer Center is for brand new immigrants and refugees to our nation. So these are students who are only just beginning to learn English. So all the students in my classroom are high school age, and they come from across the school district. And my program is housed at Ferris High School, which is a comprehensive high school in Spokane, Washington. And the most important thing for me in my classroom is that my kids are using language and that it's within a context that they can really see how we use the language, what its purpose is, and then also language that they can connect to their previous experiences. And so I choose not to use technology in my classroom. Now I can do things like connect my class with another class through Skype. I can do those conversations, but it's not the authentic conversations that they need at this stage that they're in their language acquisition. I need them to have face-to-face communication with one another and with their American-born peers who speak the language from a native fluency. And so we do things that are very, very hands-on and experiential. In this one, we had just gone out into the community and we had drawn our maps and we were creating one block on the floor in our room using tape so that they could physically move around and give each other directions. And I also do things like connecting my class with another class at school, so that they can know each other and experience each other. And my kids have the benefit of then practicing English. And the other students have the benefit of seeing this beautiful community within their own school and to understand how amazing and how much we all have to offer. So that's me. The kids do have a separate class, so they spend 5 periods a day with me. But they also spend 1 period in a computer class. And so that's how they have an introduction to the technology they will need in order to move through their high school career here in the United States. So that's where they're learning, Word and all the different things. And sometimes if there's a project that we're doing, I do a storybook project where the kids create the storybook and then they use technology to scan and then read their story so that we can keep those stories and use them later. So sometimes we connect with each other. But because I don't have a whole lot to share about what I do in my classroom with technology, I decided to reach out to another teacher of the year, Michael Sosko. So Michael Sosko teaches in Pennsylvania in a very rural community. And he's a Global Teacher Prize finalist from, I don't remember what year, it was a couple of years ago. he is the 2018 State Teacher of the Year in Pennsylvania, and he also is a member of one of the Empatico Fellows, and I'll talk a little bit about Empatico at the end of my conversation. But also, he and a few of his Global Teacher Prize cohorts wrote this book called Teaching in the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and it's all about using technology to help kids create connections and other things. So at the end of this presentation today, I'm going to give this book away to one of you. So as I get into this, I took some of the little sticky notes. So if everybody could just write their name on a sticky note, pass it around, and so then I can give it away. And you can just fold it in half so it doesn't stick anymore. All right, so does anyone have questions really quick about my classroom? I do use a smart board sometimes. We use it for journal, and the kids love to write on it because it is fancy. Anything else? Any questions about what I do? Yeah. I use some elements of GLAAD because we are a GLAAD district, so I've been GLAAD trained. So I use some elements of it, but it's not appropriate for everything that I do. I also use some PSYOP, which is the Sheltered Instruction Observation Protocol. I think that's what it stands for. And PSYOP's actually my favorite because it's the easiest to implement for all teachers, particularly secondary teachers, because GLAAD is super time intensive. For those of you who don't know what these things are, don't worry. If you do teach a lot of English language learners, you might want to look into particularly PSYOP, because it is really easy to implement those strategies in your classrooms.
So you're not into plugging your kids into Rosetta Stone?
No. No, but I do know programs that do that. So I can say that so we do five periods. We do one period that's dedicated to learning how to read, and we do a little journal writing in that period as well. We do two periods of English language development using the National Geographic Cengage Inside the USA curriculum. I mean, I adjust it because I'm not a fan of following curriculum with fidelity. And then fifth and sixth period, we found that one of the biggest challenges for our students was math. And not because they don't know math, but because math is its own language. And so we really focus on the English for math, and then it's easier for them to transition because they already usually know math. They just don't know how to articulate their understanding or understand what their teacher is asking them to do, even though they know the processes. Sometimes they'll, because we compare how we do things like long division and things, and sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys do division way better than we do. Why don't we do it that way? So I learned stuff too. So that's the five periods that we do together, with the goal that the goal is not that they're going to learn all the language that they need, because obviously I can't do that in a semester because I only have them for a semester, sometimes a year, depending. The goal is for them to be confident, to believe that they can do it, and to be willing to take risks once they leave the classroom. And we find that originally coming into this program helps them to ease that transition to studying and living in the United States. And that seems to make all the difference, because every year, at least half of our English language learning graduates started in the Newcomer Center only 4 years prior. So it's really, really effective. And it's not because of me. It's because of the program and the system of support we have. So that initial welcome really makes all the difference for the kids. Okay, so I just wanted to touch on these two educators. This is Randy House, and this is Jenny Fercucci. So Jenny Fercucci is the Delaware Teacher of the Year, and Randy House is the Arkansas Teacher of the Year. And you can see that they teach very different things. So Randy teaches kindergartners, and Jenny Fercucci teaches high school English. And so one of the ways that they use technology is to connect their classrooms. And this is just a little jump start into what Michael does. Yeah? I only have 5 minutes? I thought it was till 11:30. Holy crap, you guys. Okay, so I'm probably not going to be able to talk about all this stuff. But Jenny Fercucci and Randy House connected their classrooms via Skype so that they could know each other. So Delaware to Arkansas. And then they did a messaging between the students. So the older students were encouraging the younger students in the dreams that they had shared with the older students. So these young kids are already thinking about the potential that's in within them. And then the older kids are saying, you can do it. And so that's been a really, really powerful. So I'm not probably going to have time to go through all of these. So I'm just going to show you one of the videos. So first, Michael uses technology to bridge cultural divides. So he connects his classes with classes across the ocean. So he not only does this with his fifth grade class, he's a science teacher, but he also has traveled to other nations and helped them set up systems to where they can share with others. So he's used it to bridge cultural divides, to spread humanity, and I think this is might be the one that I want to show you. Yes, this is the video I'm going to show you. So that's Michael right there, and he's in Kenya. You can see there that that girl was feeling very confident by the end there. Oh,
to
gosh.
Improve and grow your business, you need
I just wanted
data.
To shut.
Then make your type forms even more conversational.
Oh, I was not on the X. I was on. Thank you. All right. So, and you noticed that that was a Skype call. So they use Skype to go through. He also does technology and service, so he connects classrooms across the water. And in this particular one, they created a service project that they had found out about an irrigation system or plumbing in one of the countries that was above ground, and they were constantly having issues. And so they worked not only with the classroom, Michael's classroom, but there was another classroom in like the United Kingdom, and they did a whole project, and then they were able to see how what they did impacted that community and helped them rebuild their system for plumbing and irrigation. So he does that, and then I want to show just this one more. Sorry, we have to go fast now because I obviously wasn't paying. Oops. And now I don't know what happened. I don't know how to get it back. Escape? No. Okay, there we go. Okay. It did it. Okay, so this one's just really quick. So as we're watching, I'm going to tell you what's going on here. So Empatico, and this is something that you guys should look into, especially in the lower levels, and I wish it expanded into the upper grades. So what they're doing is a mystery location game. So there's five questions, and then they the kids are communicating across. I think one is in Florida and then one is in Pennsylvania, and they're using weather, so they're learning about weather, and they're figuring out the location of where each of them is. And so this is the mystery location game, and it's used. So the thing that I want you to take from this is that technology doesn't have to isolate us. It doesn't have to simply be used to create videos or to do research or to write papers or to create PowerPoints or whatever it is that we're doing. It can be used to really create strong connections, to build humanity and empathy. They figured it out. To build humanity, to help us to see each other and make those connections. So when we can't do things like Humans of New York, we can do things like sharing Skype calls with a country in Kenya, or we can do Skype calls to connect classrooms like a kindergarten and in a high school English class. And we can really help people feel like they're seen and that they matter and that we're really not as different as we believe that we are. Okay, so really quick, I want to have your names so I can give away Michael's book because you all want it because it's amazing. Oh, thank you. Can come down to this end. Okay. I'm going to put them back here. Okay, and I pulled out Gavin Lees. Yay! Congratulations! Yeah. Okay, you guys, sorry. We were going to watch a lot of beautiful students, and we didn't get to. But anyway, have a great time. Enjoy Tech Fest, and thanks for having me and coming to my session. Thank you.